This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of The 100th Queen by Emily R. King, performed by Lauren Ezzo. For John. Author's note. The religion of the Dharachand Empire, the Parijan faith, is a fictional variation derived from Sumerian deities. However, the Parijan faith and the Dharachand Empire do not directly represent any specific historical time period, creed, or union. Any other religious or governmental similarities are coincidental and do not depict actual people or events. 1. Snowy mountains tear into the ashen sky, their jagged peaks pearly, like wolverine fangs. Cold winds sting my bare cheeks and exposed hands. The frosty temple courtyard is barren of the other daughters and sisters who reside here. Only my best friend is with me. "Strike me here," Jaya says, pointing to her neck. I frown, gripping the bamboo staff harder. "I have done this 1,000 times," she says. "Trust me, Kalinda." Jaya is the only daughter in the temple I do trust, so I swing the staff at her jugular, sweeping sideways in an arc. She stops my attack with both hands and yanks backward. Still holding the other end, I am dragged with her. Jaya jerks upward, wrenching the staff from my grasp, and brings the long end down over my shoulder blades. The bamboo gives a hollow thwack, and I crumple to my knees in the snow. Jaya straightens to her whole height, a head shorter than I am. "You should have let go." I grind my teeth together. Jaya is not gloating. She knows that I have to master this maneuver, one of several I should have already learned, and would have, if it were not for years of lying in a sickbed. I am well enough now, not that my performance shows it. I push to my feet, my back stinging almost as much as my pride. "Again." Jaya passes me the staff and rubs her hands together for warmth. I must have done something tremendous in my past lives for the gods to reward me with a friend like her. She will stay out in the cold as long as I ask, exposed to the Alpana Mountains' wintry moods. I swing the staff at her once more. Jaya catches it and yanks back, no hesitancy or leniency in her strength. I hang on, and we grip the staff face to face, our silvery breaths colliding in the icy air. My mind goes blank. I can remember the last book I read and the last sketch I drew, but I cannot remember what to do next. "Spin it fast and pull," Jaya reminds me. I whip the staff in a dizzying circle. Jaya's wrists cannot rotate with it, and she is forced to let go. Finally, I have the upper hand. I jam the short end of the staff into her chest. She jolts backward and skids on a patch of ice. I seize her arm before she falls. "Sorry," I say. "I should have warned you." "I would have done the same." One corner of Jaya's mouth curls up. "But I would have let you fall." Rightfully so. I cannot be unprepared for my first skill trials tomorrow, or my opponents will laugh me out of the ring. Training with the younger girls at the preliminary level and having them beat me was humiliating enough. I finally won my match 2 days ago and moved up to my age group, but I am still inexperienced compared to the other 18-year-olds. I skim the back of my hand across my forehead, relieved to find it cool to the touch. My health has improved since Healer Baka first concocted a tonic that lowers my chronic fevers, but I have a lot of time to make up for. And a lot of skill to prove. "Up for one more round?" I ask. Jaya brushes her ebony hair from her eyes and takes the staff from me. "See if you can stop me this time," she says. I grin, accepting her challenge. She knows that my strength lies in defensive maneuvers. She is trying to increase my confidence as a dueler, and, God's virtue, I love her for it. A sudden noise, like rocks being crushed, comes from beyond the high stone temple wall. We still and tilt our ears to the wind. Jaya's gaze intensifies on me. Wagons. By wagons, she means visitors, or, more specifically, men. I listen harder to the sounds of their approach. Many mysteries surround our gender counterparts, but I am more curious than frightened. I grab my slingshot and start for the gate. Kali, wait! Jaya tugs me back. You cannot leave the grounds alone. So come with me. She worries her lower lip with her teeth. I glance at the gate. We do not have much time. The sisters will discover us missing and come for us. The temple was built without windows, to withstand the lengthy winters and to protect our innocence. Or ignorance. This is our first and maybe our only chance to glimpse an arrival party. Jaya's gaze flits to the gate. All right. Quickly. We fling open the gate and race to an outcropping overlooking the road, the only thoroughfare leading to and from the Samaya Temple. I crouch low behind an alpine shrub, my senses jumping. Jaya joins me, shivering in the frigid wind. The steady clattering swells. I arm my slingshot with a firing stone. The sisters have warned us of Buddhas hiding in nearby caves. No one has seen the evil demons with dark powers, but I want to be prepared. A supply caravan plods into sight, a line of horse-drawn carts loaded with wares. My belly rumbles with hunger. Our last delivery of fresh goods was 3 moons ago. Jaya nudges me with her elbow. Kali, look! A gold-leafed round-top carriage, pulled by an ivory horse team, ambles over the jutted roadway. The golden carriage is the most beautiful thing I have ever seen. But an inner chill shakes me. I cannot mistake who is inside. One of the Empire's elite has come to Samaya, and the benefactors make this journey up from the valley below for only one reason. Acclaiming. Jaya frowns so hard that a crane could roost on her lower lip. I was raised in the sisterhood of the Parijun faith from infancy, but she was brought to the temple at age 8. When she shared horrible memories with me from her life before, my stomach ached for days. Several horseback riders come into view. My heart pounds harder. The lead soldier is the clearest to make out. His long legs taper from narrow hips and a boxy, solid chest. He is the first man I have seen in person. My eyes widen to take him in. He is more fascinating than the chapel murals of the sky god Anu and his son Enlil, the fire god. I want to see him more closely. Slingshot ready, I rise for a better look, and stand in full view of Priestess Mita, the headmistress, who calls for us to come in. Jaya goes directly to her. I drag my pace, hoping for another look at the lead soldier. But it is too late to see his face again. Kalinda, snaps the priestess. I hasten into the courtyard. Jaya picks up the 2 potted plants she brought out for a spot of sunshine and cradles them against her sides. Priestess Mita hustles us through the dark temple entry. Smoke curls laced with sandalwood rise from the ever-burning incense sticks stationed in the corridor to lessen the mustiness. The priestess passes us oil-lit lamps.
What were you doing outside the grounds?
For a short, shoulder-hunched woman, her authority could make a mountain tremble. I brace against her scowl. Jaya was helping me practice for skill trials.
What did you see on the road?
Nothing. Her nostrils flare.
Is that true, Jaya?
Jaya lowers her eyes. Yes, priestess. The priestess's gaze cools. She believes Jaya over me. Last year, the priestess caught me trespassing in the North Tower. I was tired of being bedridden, and I often sneaked up to the restricted observatory for fresh air. I tiptoed up there unseen for years, until she came upon me in the stairwell one night. The tower door has been locked since, and Priestess Mita's trust in me has been stowed away with the key.
Jaya, go to supper,
orders the priestess. My friend sends me a hesitant glance and then leaves, her lamp lighting the way down the corridor. Priestess Mita pins me with her stare.
You know better than to leave the temple grounds, Kalinda,
she says. Then her voice turns careful.
Are you content here?
Yes, priestess. This is my home. I would scale the highest peak of the Alpanas to protect it, but, given the opportunity, I would do the same for another look at the lead soldier. I tip my face away from the lamplight to hide my flush. Priestess Mita clucks her tongue.
Focus on your lessons, your sisters, and your devotion. Of the 5 godly virtues, which do the gods esteem above all else?
Obedience, I mumble. I do not add that I doubt that the gods intended us to be stripped of all but one choice. Then again, when it comes to the claiming, none of us have any choice at all.
You will do well to remember your place here, Priestess Mita says,
shooing me along as she leaves to greet the arrival party. I stare at the closed door at the temple entrance after she goes. I could open it a crack and steal one last peek at the men, but I know that it was fortunate that Priestess Mita did not punish me. I do not want to tempt her further. My lamp lights the way toward the dining hall. My footsteps resound through the corridors of the building, where teachings about the claiming are as old as the foundation. Long ago, the temple was instituted by the land goddess, Ki, as a refuge for female orphans, ranging from infants to young women. Like all sisterhood temples of the Parijun faith, it operates solely on monetary endowments from benefactors. But the benefactors' generosity is not without cost. They can travel to any sisterhood temple and claim a ward, to be their servant, courtesan, or wife. I quicken my step. I do not want to be claimed for any of these positions. I do not want to be claimed at all. Most daughters cannot wait to leave this remote fortress, but they will leave here only if they are claimed to live whatever life a benefactor dictates for them. I would rather stay in Samia and serve the gods than leave and serve a man. Chatter from 100 girls spills out of the dining hall. I pause at the doorway and scan the knee-high tables for Jaya. She is sitting with the other daughters our age, including Fallon and Preeta. Jaya motions me over to an empty floor cushion next to her. Sarita and Natesha sit across from them at the same table. I force away a frown and kneel beside Jaya. Fallon and Preeta smile a hello and return to their quiet chatting.
Bamboo girl, Natesha mutters.
Sarita snickers around a mouthful of rice. I pick at my food with my fingers. I do not wish to take on their tired insults about my awkward height and skinniness. Jaya leans into my side. Are you all right? I shrug and poke at my watered-down curry. I want to talk about the golden carriage, but not in front of the others. I would rather that our rare glimpse of the outside world stay between us. Priestess Mita enters the dining hall with an orderly line of sisters trailing behind her. Fallon and Preeta stop talking, and all eating halts across the hall. The sisters line up at the front of the room. Jaya tenses beside me, and I wipe my hands, no longer hungry. Our leaders rarely interrupt mealtime.
Daughters, I have marvelous news.
The priestess presses her hands together as if in prayer.
A benefactor has arrived for a claiming.
Most of the girls, even those too young to be a recipient of this rite, gasp with delight. Priestess Mita allows the outburst, smiling proudly. I seek out Jaya's hand beneath the table and clasp her chilly fingers in mine. The priestess strides our way to address the girls of age. 12 of us kneel at 2 tables. Our blue saris are identical, the shade of obedience and submission, deference and conformity. That is where my similarity with the other girls ends. My gangliness sticks out among their compact curves like a pin stuck into a basket full of thread spools.
By request of our honored benefactor, tomorrow's skill trials will continue as planned, says the priestess.
They will take place in the courtyard, where the benefactor will watch anonymously from the North Tower Observatory. Resentment ignites low in my belly. I want to duel for my own sense of accomplishment, not for a benefactor's entertainment. I do not care to gain the benefactor's favor. Priestess Mita paces the length of our table, her words deliberate and her steps measured.
You will be given the choice to spar with a staff or a bladed weapon.
Jaya squeezes my hand so hard that my fingertips tingle. Because my chronic fevers have held me behind the other girls, I have not trained with bladed weapons. We learn to slash and parry with steel after we master the staff. I am more than fair with a slingshot, but it is not considered a respectable weapon in the ring.
We want each of you to look your best when you are shown, Priestess Mita says.
Her smile contains an edge of warning.
Be mindful not to leave too many marks on your opponent.
I look askance at Natasha smirking. Everyone knows that she wants to leave the temple and become the wife of a benefactor. If she had a choice, she would fight against the weakest girl to increase the appearance of her own skill. And it is no secret that I am the weakest girl. 2. Winter's chill soaks into the temple's ancient bones, dampening the shadowed corridors. Jaya and I leave the dining hall in silence and return to our bedchamber. We change into our nightclothes and brush out our braids, and then Jaya tends to her pots of seedlings, and I cozy into my cot with a sketchbook. Our nightly routine is effortless, comforting. I refuse to think that this evening's could be our last. Jaya drizzles water over green shoots in her clay pots. She is assigned to tend to healer Baka's medicinal garden, but these are not herbs. With little exposure to sunlight in our windowless home, Jaya has successfully grown only poisonous plants, but she prefers to nurture something rather than nothing. She sets aside her watering can and stands behind me, stroking her fingers through my hair. She considers my sketch. This is how we first met. Jaya had spent her early weeks at the temple in the infirmary, recovering from being starved, beaten, and hurt in other ways that Healer Baka only whispered about. During one of my bouts of fevers, I was laid up in the cot beside Jaya's, and she asked to see my drawing. Most of the other girls would not come near me for fear that I was contagious. But Jaya did not mind. I have shown her all of my sketches since. Jaya finishes smoothing down my hair. The wheels were bigger. She has a fine eye for proportions, so naturally she is right. She sits down beside me. I rub away the wheels and redraw them, wider. Jaya picks up my other sketchbook and flips through the finished drawings. Portraits of her, the garden where we played fly-fly crane between the barley, and the meditation pond where we raced lotus flower petals. She stops on a drawing of the sky god. Anu is the most prominent male subject I have ever sketched. I am enthralled by the hard, angled lines of his rugged facial features, so like the formidable Alpana Mountains. In my drawing, a sarong covers his thighs. His hairless, bare chest is flat and wide like a valley, and his lean legs are strong like a river. He wields a shard of sunlight in one hand, his other hand outstretched in invitation to follow him. Anu is the majesty of the world. His large eyes are the doorway to the sky, his fierce expression a warning of his omnipotent power. Jaya traces a finger down Anu's nose. What if you're claimed?
What if Natasha starts being kind to me?
Jaya's lips tauten. The benefactor could see your worth and claim you, Kali. I shake my head. I will be passed over. My best physical attribute, according to Jaya, is my long hair. But hair is not enough to draw the eye of a benefactor. Jaya's shoulders curl over her chest, and her voice drops to a whisper. What if I am claimed? I open my mouth to tell her not to worry. But Jaya is not gawky and whip-thin like me. She is petite and lovely. Looking at her, I understand her anxiety. I cannot imagine anyone passing her over. Her voice becomes even more scraggly.
What if the benefactor is like my...
Do not think about it. No matter who he is, it does not change our plans. Jaya and I plan to swear fealty to the sisterhood and live out our days here. But we can do so only if we are passed over during the rite. They will not separate us. We will make certain of it.
How? You may not even pass inspection.
I tamp down a groan. I forgot about inspection. Healer Baka examines each recipient before the claiming to weed out those who are not in prime condition for the benefactor. She has not said if my illness will impede my chances, but taking a daily tonic may be grounds to fail me. We will worry about inspection later, I say. First, we have to discuss skill trials. The benefactor must want to judge how well we are trained as sister warriors. Jaya nods solemnly. Sister warriors are prized among men. The most desirable girls are pretty and skilled at battle. You have to lose your duel, I say. The benefactor won't want you if you're defeated. Jaya's eyebrows slant together. What about you?
Me? I scoff.
Even if I somehow won, the benefactor would still prefer a pretty face.
And if we're chosen to fight each other?
I laugh. Then I will best you, even though all the girls will know we cheated.
Jaya rests her hand on my shoulder and takes my hand. We weave our fingers together, clamping our palms close.
All right. But we cannot get caught, or Priestess Mita will put us on refuse duty for the rest of the year. Our losses must be believable.
That will be easy for me. I lean my head against hers and stare down at our linked hands.
We will be careful.
Can you sleep? Jaya asks, sitting up.
Of course. I feign a smile. I will dream of besting you.
Jaya snorts a laugh. She squeezes my hand, our way of saying I love you, and then kisses my forehead and goes to her bed.
Despite my attempt at humor, the reality of the next day saws at my nerves. Regardless of our plan for skill trials, Healer Baka could fail me during inspection and Jaya would face the claiming without me. I want to be seen by this benefactor and be done with the rite. Then, once passed over, Jaya and I can join the sisterhood. Most girls opt to be shown again for a chance to leave. A recipient who is not claimed by age 21 is automatically sworn in as a sister. But few wards last that long. Benefactors are always in need of more servants. Amber candlelight warms my sketchbook. I open to a fresh page and slide my charcoal stick over the ivory paper, leaving smooth, dark lines. I hope that putting my thoughts on paper will relieve my mind. I waited for Jaya to go to bed to draw this. I cannot get it out of my head. Finished, I lift my hand. The lead soldier looks exactly how I remember him, with shoulders a mountain could rest upon, and arms powerful enough to soar with the clouds. But his face remains blank, as is true of all the male faces I have attempted to draw. As an infant, I was abandoned on the steps of the Vani Brotherhood's temple, run by the men of the Parijun faith. I cannot remember the brethren who cared for me until I was old enough to transfer here. In fact, I do not remember ever seeing a man. Jaya has told me about her older brothers, warning of what will await us should we be claimed. I believe her, but the brethren are proof that not all men are terrible. And the sisters teach that men are our masters and protectors. Staring at my sketch of the faceless soldier, I do not know what is true. Did the gods create everything about us? They gave me fevers and gave certain plants poison. But did they give people their power? Was Natesha born a tormentor? Was Jaya always cautious? Where is the line between the gods' will and ours?
I set aside my sketchbook, still wondering if all men are fashioned like Jaya's cruel older brothers, and if I really am better off without them. A white satin robe is draped across the end of my bed when I awake. Someone left an identical robe at the foot of Jaya's cot, where she still sleeps. They are our clothes for the claiming. I slip out of my rumpled bed, achy with restlessness. I did not dream of skill trials. I did not dream at all. Fretting about Healer Baka not passing me during inspection drove sleep away. I cannot speculate any longer. I have to speak with her. Flinging a shawl over my shoulders, I tiptoe down the hushed corridors, through incense smoke and pools of lamplight. Though I have no way to see the dawn, a chill emanates through the stone walls, whispering of the early hour. The familiar pathway to the infirmary sets me on edge. I have spent more time with Healer Baka than any other sister. I do not wish to argue, but if she uses my chronic fevers as an excuse to exclude me from being shown in the claiming, I will oppose her. I pass the stairwell opening, and murmurs carry up from below. The rumbles are so faint that I nearly miss them. I back up to listen, sharpening my hearing. The voices are low, lower than I have ever heard. I silence my breaths, but my pulse drums a quickening tempo. I think that these voices are the voices of men. Priestess Mita's reprimand from yesterday pricks at me. I should return to my bedchamber and be obedient. The lower floors are forbidden to daughters. But God's virtue, I want to see who is down there. I descend into shadows, all light skittering away from the skulking darkness. I feel my way along the wall, my fingertips chafing against rough stone. Each step drops me farther into bone-drenching cold. I lose track of the number of stairs and the number of times I carefully survey for the bottom with my bare toes. The floor smooths out, and the wall I was trailing disappears. A low voice barely thrums above my thundering heart. I chase the sound down an unlit corridor toward a gaunt glow at the far end. The temple is the only shelter on this secluded mountaintop. I had not given any thought to where the benefactors lodge, but it must be here, on this level. The corridor juts into a lit alcove. Two deep voices steal out from behind a tall door, their exact words broken by the barrier. I eye the way out. I know that I could be caught, but their conversation may tell me who has come. I creep up to the entry and lean in to listen.
You're not supposed to be here. I spin around at the muted voice, no louder than those through the door, and alarm pushes me back a step.
A young soldier blocks my escape path. I must have passed him in the dark.
He grips the hilt of a sword slung at his side. Does anyone know you're down here? My tongue thickens to a useless lump in my mouth. From the drawings I have studied of the gods, I wager that the soldier is 2 or 3 years older than I am. He is also taller, a rarity. I have towered over everyone since I was 13. Despite the soldier's daunting stature, I do not sense aggression from him, merely suspicion. I pull my shawl closer around me.
I heard voices, I say. And
I have no reasonable excuse. I doubt that he would believe that above all else I wanted to see a man's face.
His face is not what I expected. He looks more god than mortal. Though the angular shape of his jaw is the image of Anu's, the smooth sweep of his cheekbones, the fullness of his lips, and the straight slope of his nose resemble Enlil, who takes after his mother, Ki, the land goddess. His arrangement of delicate, yet sturdy features is striking.
You need to go.
The soldier glances at the closed door. He must be guarding whoever is inside.
It isn't safe here.
My palms turn clammy, but I cannot leave without the answer that I came for. Who has come for the claiming?
His gaze and voice flatten. You must leave.
Beyond the door, the talking ceases. My ears explode with the sound of approaching footsteps.
Go!
The soldier sweeps me out of the alcove. I flee down the dimmed corridor, pursued by the creak of an opening door and the annoyed voice of a man.
Captain Nike?
My lungs burn from short, shallow breaths. Something wet squishes through my toes. My teeth lock down on a squeak. A little farther. Almost to the stairwell.
I relieved Manas of his post, says the captain. I apologize for disturbing you, Your Majesty.
I trip forward on the lowest stair and scrape my hands on the stone.
Your Majesty?
Tremors rack my body. I cover my mouth, locking in a gasp. Raja Tarak is here. The ruler of the Tarachand Empire has come to Samia. I hold still, my flesh shivering.
Where is Manas?
Challenges another voice, the second stranger to speak.
He has gone to bed, General, replies the captain.
I frown, my only movement. Why is Captain Nike protecting me? Why does he not tell the Raja that a girl listened at his door?
Come in, Captain,
the Raja says.
I wish to discuss our plans, for after I claim...
The door creaks closed. An icy finger slithers down my spine. Raja Tarak has come for the claiming. I rest my forehead against a stair. Heat blazes down my face. In seconds, I burn all over. Gods, I forgot to take my tonic. A sudden fever drives a hot mallet through the top of my head. I rise on shaky limbs and push myself up the dark stairwell to the main floor. Daughters pass me on the way to the dining hall for breakfast. I weave down the corridor and stagger into my bedchamber. Jaya is awake and dressed. Her arms and legs are marked with hives, red, raised, and furious. The room reeks of chamomile. Healer Baka says they will go away, Jaya says, slathering ointment on her legs. I eye the angry dots on her skin. Where did they come from?
I'm having a reaction.
To one of your plants?
To the claiming?
She rubs ointment into her arms with trembling hands, her countenance pale. Healer Baka says I need to calm down, but...
Where were you?
On a walk? I stumble to my cot and sit, elbows on my knees, head in my hands.
Breathe.
Jaya hurries over and tests my forehead.
You're burning up. You didn't take your tonic this morning.
Groaning, I lie back.
Get it for me, would you?
Jaya finds it on the bedside table and pushes it into my hand. I uncork the thin vial and draw a swig. The fermented tang sours my mouth, but I swallow. A rush of coolness accompanies the remedy to my belly, clearing my mind. My fever came on fast. Usually it takes a day before I reach that height of illness. Jaya hovers over me, tugging her braid nervously. Dark circles stain the skin under her bloodshot eyes. Do I need to fetch Healer Baka?
I'm fine. I grab Jaya's hand and lay it against my forehead.
See? I'm cooling off. Her tepid skin soothes my flaring face, and my temperature adjusts to hers. I sniff loudly and smile.
You smell like Healer Baka's herb garden.
She laughs and looks at her rash.
We're quite the pair. If only the benefactor could see us now.
My smile stiffens. I cannot tell her that Raja Tarak is the benefactor. She is already sick with worry. Furthermore, his identity does not change our strategy for skill trials. But the immensity of his presence weighs me down. I cannot understand why the Raja wants to watch us duel before the claiming. Skill trials are a rite of passage, proof of womanhood and the exercise of moral maturity, proof that we deserve our inherited birthright from Ki. A true sister warrior is well-trained and physically strong, but she is also dedicated to practicing the five godly virtues: obedience, service, sisterhood, humility, and tolerance. The Raja wishes to view a test of our inner and outer strength, but for what purpose? All I am certain of is that Raja Tarak has come to claim a girl. and by midday I will know what for.
3. A silhouette darkens the casement of the observatory at the top of the North Tower. I try not to look up, or think of the Raja watching us as I listen to Priestess Mita's instructions.
I appreciate your being on time, daughters. We hope to hurry these trials along and move you back inside where it is warm.
Jaya and I huddle against the frosty wind lashing at us. We wear training saris, the pleats passed between our knees and tucked into the waistline at the back, allowing free movement while covering our legs. The slippery ground beneath us has been cleared, the ice chipped away to reveal the circle that was hidden during practice yesterday. The dueling ring.
Today's skill trials will be run a bit differently. Our benefactor has made a request.
The priestess glances up, and our gazes follow. The Raja presses against the observatory casement in anticipation, his dark silhouette growing. My brittle nerves tighten.
The match will end when the winner draws first blood.
I narrow my gaze in dissent. As a rule, the duel winner is whoever drives her opponent out of the circle first. We never battle until first blood. Priestess Mita holds herself too still, her rigidness pronounced by her silent disapproval of the changed guidelines.
For leniency, injuries you acquire in the ring will not be taken into account during inspection.
How considerate of them. Jaya and I exchange a look, our brows raised. Healer Baka and our defense trainer, Sister Hetal, who has stepped aside to let the priestess mediate, wait on the sideline. The healer attends skill trials in case a girl is accidentally injured. A tassel of nausea hangs in my belly. Those defeated today will definitely need her care. The priestess's voice pervades the courtyard.
Step forward to draw lots.
Jaya grabs my hand and pulls me to the front of the group. The priestess offers her fist of wooden lots to the daughter in front of her. Me. I pull out a long lot, and Natesha draws next. Hers is a quarter the size of mine. Natesha sucks her teeth.
Shame.
I almost agree. I would like to see her skin run red. But the likelihood of my winning a duel against her is lower than the chance of escaping the void. Sarita draws a wooden lot and measures it against mine. We are a match. She grins, and I arrange my features into apathy. Our pairing is anything but fair. Sarita is the third most skilled fighter here, after Natesha and Jaya. The other girls pluck their lots. They match fates, coupling off and wishing each other good luck. Priestess Mita hands Jaya the final one. Natesha nails Jaya with a pointed smirk.
Looks like you are with me.
Their match is even, but Jaya has to lose to Natesha and I must lose to Sarita. The Raja must see us bleed. Priestess Mita finishes our instructions.
Those with the shortest lots will go first, then the next shortest, and so on. Our first match is between...
She scans the pairs of girls.
Natesha and Jaya. Daughters, select your weapons.
Natesha jogs to the weapons laid out near the iced-over meditation pond and chooses first. She sneers at Jaya on her way to the dueling ring with a kanda. As the biggest, scariest weapon, the long, double-edged sword suits Natesha's battle style. Intimidating, abrasive, hefty, but powerful. Jaya selects the haladi, a double-bladed knife. The weapon reflects her combat method. Versatile, precise, small yet quick. She could win with the haladi, but I do not know if she can lose. The rest of us cluster around the outer perimeter of the circle. No one may enter the ring until the victor is declared. I drift to the back, refusing to look up at the Raja spying over us. I cannot stomach watching Jaya be defeated. Hives still blemish her arms and legs. I pray that Natesha will not do anything permanent to her. Jaya and Natesha assume their stances. feet spread, knees bent, shoulders tense, weapons raised.
On my mark.
The priestess lifts a hand drum, palm hovering over the stretched deerskin face. Tension sparks the air.
Her hand thunders down on the drum.
Natasha lunges, swiping the blade at Jaya's chest. Jaya spins like an arrow, and their shafts clash. Natasha's Kanda is slow to rebound, and Jaya retreats to the rim of the ring. I scan my friend from head to toe and exhale slowly. No blood yet. Natasha paces around Jaya, attacking with taunting smirks. She has won many matches by intimidating her opponent, but her efforts are wasted here today. Jaya is prepared to be beaten. Jaya closes the gap and brings her blade down against Natasha's. I cringe at the screeching metal. The challenger's grunts reverberate off the outer walls. The onlookers are silent. We typically cheer on our favorites, but today this is less about skill trials and more about the claiming. Apprehension hangs over us like a thunderhead. One of us will be taken from here today. Maybe more than one of us. And no one knows who. Jaya thrusts with the short halati blade, grazing Natasha's sari. She pauses to see if she drew blood. She missed. Only I know that the miss was intentional. Natasha swoops in with the kanda, ramming Jaya back. Jaya falls and drops her blade. Natasha places the tip of the sword to Jaya's torso. My friend stills. So does my breath. Natasha raises the sharp point to Jaya's face and rips a slash across her cheek. Fury hits me like a wall of flame. I do not realize that I am moving until I have shoved my way into the circle. Natasha shifts the sword to Jaya's other cheek. She is going to cut her again. I slam my whole body into Natasha's side. She spins through the air, feebly lifting the sword to defend herself. I roll forward in a somersault and unfurl, kicking my feet into her legs. Natasha flings away and lands, hard, on her back, banging the kanda loose from her hand. Snatching up the sword, I stoop over her. I lower the thick middle of the blade to her throat. Somewhere, at the back of my mind, I know that I should stop. But I do not care about the plan. I do not care about the Raja. Natasha did not mark Jaya in a spot that could be hidden. She scarred Jaya on purpose.
Kali, stop!
Jaya calls. Blood runs down her cheek from the gash, feeding my rage. My blade bites into Natasha's neck. Crimson flecks bead around the razor edge. She freezes at the scent of her own blood. Not a gasp or a plea leaves her lips, parted in fear.
Kalinda!
Priestess Mita's snappish voice tears through my haze of vengeance. She drags me away from Natasha, and I stagger back, staring wide-eyed at Natasha's bloody throat. I did that. Sister Hetal kneels in front of Natasha. Ilarbaka rushes forward to help Jaya. My friend holds her cheek, scarlet teardrops seeping through her pale fingers.
Kalinda, go inside.
Priestess Mita's order leaves no quarter for disobedience. Before I take a step, someone starts to clap. Without a word, every person in the courtyard gazes up at the north tower scraping the gray sky. The applause stops, and a deep, firm voice shouts from above.
Let her stay!
Barbs of terror dig under my skin. The courtyard goes as still as a sky burial. This is the first time many of these girls have heard a man speak. Priestess Mita breaks from the dais first.
Kalinda, you heard the benefactor. Step back and wait your turn.
Her eyes roll upward, and she steals a look at the Raja without lifting her chin. She is frightened of him. Hilarbaka helps Jaya up. I start toward my friend, but the healer warns me off.
She's going to the infirmary. Stay here.
I will be all right. Jaya holds her bloody face. Be careful, Kali. She eyes the tower, and she and Hilarbaka walk toward the entry. Sister Hetal raises Natasha to standing.
Natasha blubbers on as if her neck has been cut clean through, but her wound is a mere scrape compared to the one on Jaya's cheek.
My lack of empathy after what I did surprises me.
Natessa saw Jaya's lovely face as competition, so she marred her. I wish the pain of 1,000 cuts upon her head. I toss the Khanda into the weapons pile and join the daughters waiting to duel. The weight of their shocked gazes oscillates from me to the shadow watching from above.
Sarita and Kalinda, please step forward.
At last, Priestess Mita has called our names. Natasha and Jaya left less than an hour ago, but we have shivered in the cold for an eternity. I am ready to be done with my trial and go inside. The rest of the duels were predictable. Fallen overcame her opponent, and Preeta lost, the former being the more aggressive of the pair. All that remains is for Sarita to defeat me, and she must. The Raja has not applauded or spoken again. I have drawn too much attention to myself. I did not intend to, but now is my chance to reverse my mistake. Sarita and I face off in the ring. Not one for subtlety, she has chosen the Khanda. I am the first dueler to select the staff. Everyone else attacked with a blade. Each visitor sliced her opponent in unseen places. Arms, legs, torsos. Never again on the face. My only regret, other than drawing the Raja's attention, is that I did not repay Natasha's cruelty with a more appropriate punishment. I should have cut her cheek and tarnished her face, too. Grasping the staff with both hands, I prepare my defense. Sarita may be shorter than I am, but she is nimble and has a mighty swing. Though my assault on Natasha made me out to be a swordswoman, I am most comfortable with the weapons I have trained with. Priestess Mita strikes the hand drum, and Sarita moves in.
Natasha isn't here with me because of you, she says, blade raised.
I rotate the staff in a circle.
Neither is Jaya. She did nothing to Natasha. She did nothing to anyone.
Sarita bares her teeth.
Natasha wanted to fight you.
She did a poor job of showing it. Sarita lunges, hacking at the air with sloppy, angry swings. I evade her, sidestepping. She thrusts and connects with the bamboo. The strong vibration jolts up my arm. I revolve, and we meet again. The blade hacks a chunk out of the staff.
I knew you would choose to fight with a tree, Sarita smirks, all superiority and malice. It's as ugly and skinny as you.
Annoyance rasps at me. Quit jabbering and end this.
I strike at her head with the maneuver that Jaya and I practiced yesterday. Only I misjudge the strength of irritation behind my swing, along with how far apart we are. The end of the staff smacks Sarita in the mouth. Priestess Mita beats the drum, signaling the end of our duel. I stare, openly, at Sarita's split lip. She touches her injured mouth and gapes at her bloody fingertips. My victory was not a brazen show of skill. Neither of us expected me, the weakest fighter here, to draw first blood. Alarm barrels down on me. What have I done? The priestess dabs Sarita's lip with a cloth bandage, and the daughters clear the courtyard. Everyone shivers from standing in the wintry air, and it isn't long before they have all funneled inside. I am the last to go in, but not before I hear the distinct ring of applause from the pinnacle of the North Tower. I nearly laugh at the girls scurrying out of my way in the corridor. They have always kept a distance on account of my illness, but they have not had a real reason to fear me. It is disconcerting, yet oddly satisfying, that I have given them one. The familiar scents of ground ginger and sweet chamomile welcome me into the infirmary. The cot healer Baka reserves for me is empty, and none of the other beds are occupied. We are alone, like we were for most of my childhood.
Where is Jaya? I say. Is she all right?
Healer Baka looks up from sterilizing her instruments.
Jaya needed stitches. She will have a small scar from the cut, but she is fit to be shown. I sent her to dress for the rite.
The healer considers me from behind her spectacles.
I understand why you stepped in to defend her, but you went too far.
I rest my hands on the back of a chair and stare her down. Someone had to help Jaya. How long was the priestess going to wait before intervening? Until after Natesha marked Jaya's other cheek?
How long should she have waited to pull you off Natesha? Until after you slit her throat?
I clamp my mouth shut, and Healer Baka tempers her voice.
You cut Natesha the same way she cut Jaya. You have to make peace with what you did.
She scarred Jaya on purpose.
And what you did was so different?
Healer Baka asks gently.
Making peace is not for her. It is for you.
I grip the chair, remembering the weight of the sword in my hand. Sisterhood is one of our 5 learned godly virtues. But I have no sisterly love for Natesha. I will not apologize. I was right to help Jaya.
That may be so, but peace is a choice, Kali. A decision not to be at odds with the world and to accept the gods' path for you. You can attain no higher peace of mind than doing what the gods would have you do.
I glower at the floor. I have so little freedom. It is unfair for her to expect me to forgive Natesha. Holding a grudge is one of the few choices I have. Healer Baka rounds the table and touches my forearm, forcing my gaze up. Her brow creases with concern.
How do you feel?
Fine. It is on my lips to tell her that my fever surged when the dosage expired, but she would scold me for neglecting to take my medicine on time. How much longer will I have to take my tonic?
A tonic isn't a cure, Kali. You could grow out of your fevers, but it is just as likely the tonic's effectiveness will wear off.
We frown at each other, mutually dissatisfied. After years of failed remedies, Healer Baka concocted a fever-reducing tonic. However, she has not determined the source of my sickness. We know that I am not contagious, since I am often the only patient in the infirmary. Her best theory is that I inherited my fevers from a family member, but with my unknown parentage, it is impossible to confirm. Still, my past is not what concerns me most. Jaya and I have to pass inspection before the claiming, and considering the Raja's unpredictable behavior at skill trials, I decide that we should abandon our efforts to be shown. I would rather that we suffer through a second rite together than face the Raja and risk being separated. But ultimately, Healer Baka has the final word. I meet her stare.
Can I pass inspection? You know the rules. No one unfit will stand before the benefactor.
She removes her spectacles, revealing her stern gaze.
I will judge you fairly, but if you feel a single degree warmer than you should, I will fail you.
I manage a wavering smile. Healer Baka means to prepare me for the disappointment of failing inspection. She must think that I am worried that my fever will spoil my chance of being seen by the benefactor. But that is precisely what I want. I pray that Jaya's hives and my fever will be enough to spare us from the Raja. Healer Baka pats my arm.
Go change.
4. I strip off my robe, letting the ivory satin pool at my bare feet, and resist the urge to cover myself. The sisters taught us the order of the rite, so I was fully prepared to disrobe, but being naked before my peers heightens my insecurities about my thinness. Goose flesh puckers across my exposed skin. I am one of 12 girls, standing in 2 rows in the inspection chamber. Healer Baka patrols the lines of nude daughters, looking in eyes and mouths, peering up noses and into ears. No one utters a complaint. The claiming is our payment for a life of shelter, food, clothes, and training. This is what we were saved for. The healer stops beside me in front of Jaya.
The gash across Jaya's cheek has been sewn shut with a skin-tight row of tiny, black stitches. Her hives are nearly gone. The chamomile ointment soothed away the redness. My hope that we will fail inspection does not look good. Ilarbaka finishes with my friend, and her calm eyes meet mine. I try to ignore the healer's adept hands roaming around my body, but it is impossible not to be anxious about potentially being shown to the Raja. I breathe easier when Ilarbaka moves on. Natesha lobs a withering glance over her shoulder at me from where she stands in the front line. A white bandage rings her neck. A thimble's worth of shame spills over me, but with one sideways glance at Jaya's cheek, fury burns my guilt to smoke. I do not know how long we wait, but my knees ache when Ilarbaka finishes.
"You may put your clothes back on," she says.
I scoop my robe off the floor and cover myself. Natesha and Sarita flaunt their bodies, unrushed to get dressed. They are replicas of the goddess Ki, petite and round, soft yet firm, fit yet feminine. So unlike my gangly, angled shape. Priestess Mita, who watched the inspection from the rear of the chamber, confers with Ilarbaka. They speak in low, heated voices. Ilarbaka looks at me and shakes her head. Priestess Mita nods fervently and steps forward.
"Daughters, you have all passed," says the priestess.
Alok gazes with Jaya. Her weak smile releases slivers of fear. "We are going to be shown to the Raja."
"Daughters,"
says Priestess Mita,
"we will now adorn you with the mark of Enki."
The priestess and Ilarbaka come around with a pot of henna and draw a wavy line down each girl's spine. The wave symbol dyed into our skin represents the water goddess Anki. Stories depict Anki as a daughter who walks in perfect obedience to her parents, Anu and Ki. Wearing Anki's mark indicates to the benefactor that we are in full submission. I let my robe hang low at my back, clutching it to my front. Priestess Mita marks me and then leaves the henna to dry and flake away. Once we are all adorned, the priestess whisks us to the side door.
"Form a line. We cannot leave our benefactor waiting."
Jaya and I pair up and hang back. The other girls take their positions close to the door. Priestess Mita ushers Preeta into the adjoining chamber first with Ilarbaka. Jaya and I step up to the end of the line, and I take her hand. We have prepared for the day we could be separated, and have done everything we can to prevent it from happening. Now our fate is up to the gods. The line shortens. One by one, the daughters are shown to Raja Tarek until only Jaya and I remain. The priestess tilts her head toward the door to listen. Ilarbaka soon appears and motions Jaya inside the chamber. My breath constricts into a hot, burning ball. Raja Tarek may have shown me favor at skill trials, but his wives and courtesans are renowned for their breathtaking beauty. One look at my bony shape and he will conclude that I am not a girl to add to his collection. He will pass me over and I will be free of the benefactors, but Jaya... Great Anu, please do not let her be claimed. The door opens a final time, and Priestess Mita accompanies me inside the claiming chamber. I have not been allowed in here before. The walls, ceiling, and floor are tiled in a multicolored mosaic, depicting clouds as white as the August moon, land the deep orange of safflower seeds, fire a madder red, and water a serene indigo. Opposite the entry, a heavy mallow cloth hangs from ceiling to floor.
"Face the veil and undress," says Ilarbaka.
Someone painted a red line on the ground near the white drapery. My gaze downward, I approach the worn, chipped line. I shrug out of my robe, wondering how many daughters have stood in this exact spot, naked and afraid. Priestess Mita collects my robe and dangles a strip of muslin. Every daughter is blindfolded to preserve her innocence for future benefactors. The priestess brushes my long hair behind me, and I stoop so that she can tie on the blindfold. Sudden darkness disorients me.
I touch my covered eyes and press my knuckles against my pounding temples. I cannot stop from quaking. The room falls silent. Someone is hiding behind the drapes.